Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are a double interview here today. Just take turns introducing yourself, but your name and your title, both with the Philharmonic and the church. Peter, go first.
Hi, this is Peter Gajewski, Music Director of the National Philharmonic at Strathmore.
And this is Chuck Williams. I am a member of Scotland, AME Zion Church in Potomac, Maryland.
And we are talking because the National Philharmonic is going to be performing Handel's Messiah at Strathmore on Saturday, December 17th and Sunday, December 18th. And then again, at Friday, December 23rd at Capital One Hall. And this is the reason we wanted to chat. I mean, that alone is, you know, a reason to come see it because it's the holidays. But this interview, this story, this time goes so much deeper because you're going to be raising money. These performances are going to be raising money for the Scotland African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. Which is right located near Strathmore. And there's such a, I'll let you guys take it, but you know, talk about the sort of brief backstory of both the church, the general area, and why, you know, the running water situation, not since the 70s, everything. But I want to hear it in your words, you know, why we need to raise money for this church.
Sure. Peter, would you like to go first?
Sure. So National Philharmonic has been performing the Messiah for decades, literally. But this time we're motivated by something different. And that is a relatively new scholarship that that has revealed that Handel made handsome money investing in slave trade. So the question is, how do we in the 21st century respond to having learned that? Do we stop playing his music, or is there some more constructive way of moving forward? And what we have decided that we would do is that we would move forward, but we would utilize the revenues from the performance of Messiah that was created in part with funds generated through the investment in slave trade, to assist today a community of color composed largely of descendants of formerly enslaved people and those oppressed through decades, even since the abolition of slavery in America. So that's kind of the backdrop of what we're doing, trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
Wow, Peter. Well, so that's sort of speaking to the whole, you know, trying to separate the art from the artist sort of thing. And I'm glad that, I think you found a perfect way to do it, which is to you know, send the money raised off of this. You know, that's so troubling to me, by the way, just the idea of, you know, everyone in the holidays can sing hallelujah. Everyone knows that. But okay, so a slaveholder wrote those words.
Not a slaveholder,
but made money off of the slave trade.
Made money off of it. And it's not too far of a stretch to say that music would not exist, yeah, but for him having made that money, because he utilized the money from his investments to subsidize the oratorios and the operas that he was writing in England in 1720s, 30s, 40s. Right. So when he wrote the Messiah.
Wow. And then for Chuck, for the church's side, speak a little bit too about how, you know, just a little backstory of the church and, you know, what we were saying before we got on here about it, you know, it was in part of a Montgomery County sort of built in like a flood zone, didn't have running water till like the 70s. Like, give me some of the backstory of the area and the church itself.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. So the church was actually founded, the congregation was founded in 1905. And by 1924, they were able to construct the building. This building was constructed by, I guess you would call them laymen. None of them were really construction professionals or anything of that sort. They built this by hand. So it's been standing ever since. We've expanded it a little, added more to it, but it's always been there. The surrounding area is what became a challenge. At one point, the county decided to straighten out Seven Locks Road, which is where the church is located, and they actually went through some of the church's land. We have found records where there were people, because of the historic treatment of African Americans after the Civil War, in what we call the Jim Crow era, where they were not really educated, and their education, if they had any, did not go that far. So we found records of contracts that were signed by people with the letter X because they could not read or write. So who knows what may have been told to them and what the actual results were. But we were put into a situation that the community, or the church, I should say, wound up in a floodplain. And the result is, every time we get a bad storm, the basement of the church would flood. But
What
back
is
in
it,
that
Cabin John Creek or Old Farm Creek or whatever? Back, it's up back past like where Montgomery Mall is, right? Up north.
That's correct.
Yeah, back behind the river behind there. Flood the church is what you're saying?
That's correct. That's correct. And the problem became, I mean, we would pump the water out over the years. But in 2019, there was a severe rainstorm that flooded the area, and it actually took out one of the walls. And that put the building in a situation where we were not certain if it was safe to go in there, since it was only supported by three sides instead of four. So we're looking at a opportunity to rebuild, to look back at how these things happen, and restore the ground so that we're able to mitigate some of the damage that comes as a result of flooding. And then we're looking at an expansion project where we can build something that can better serve the community.
Wow. So give me a sense of, and it's okay if you don't know the answers exactly yet, but on the ballpark, like what sort, how much money are we trying to raise? How long of a timeline might it be to, do the renovations that you think need to be done? Like I know it's all called, it's the Second Century Project, I believe, that's going to be raising the funds, right?
That is
Just
correct.
yeah, give me just if you could. I know specifics are hard sometimes, but like, what's sort of the goal? How much proceeds from this concert will go into an overall fund of what that will over time? You know what I mean?
Sure. What I can tell you on my part, and Peter, feel free to jump in there, is that we sat down with architects. We had this project priced out, and what we're looking at in order to do this the way that it the right way, let's say it that way, is a total of $9 million.
Wow, okay.
So in terms of so obviously it's a very large fundraising project going spanning a number of years. The National Philharmonic contribution from the concerts that we'll be doing at Strathmore will be 50% of all ticket sales. So it will go well into tens of thousands of dollars that we'll be contributing. So we want to invite everyone to come out, hear some great music, and know that half of what you're paying for your ticket is going to support this project. And by the way, we have a fabulous cast of soloists. Incidentally, it is all African American soloists, a quartet of soloists, and it's conducted by Stan Engebretson, our chorale artistic director, and the National Philharmonic at Strathmore.
Well, tell me about the African American soloists that you mentioned. Name drop a few of them and dote on their talent if you have a sec.
Well, sure. I mean, they all have long resumes, and the best way is just to go to our website. But Kirsten Piper Brown, soprano, is a fabulous, fabulous singer, classical singer, musical singer, actress, just great. Lucia Bradford, mezzo. Norman Schenkel, the tenor, has appeared with us numerous times, including last year in a premiere of A Knee on the Neck by Adolphus Hale Storck. And he's appears all over. And then the baritone for the performance is Jarrell Williams. But they're all just at the height of their careers, and fabulous voices. Really looking forward to it.
Wow. And of course you'll have the actual National Philharmonic. You know, remind our listeners, you know, how many piece or, you know, orchestra.
Oh, yeah, well,
many,
full orchestra for a full Handel's Messiah. Absolutely. And there'll also be information about the second century project, and you know, people can contribute beyond just purchasing tickets, of course, as well. So so just a great community event, supporting a great community cause, and enjoying the holiday spirit.
And really quick, you mentioned that one of the performers also, you know, performed at your concert that was called A Knee on the Neck. I remember we covered that back in March, I believe. And at the time before the show, you had said that it was sort of confidential, but you thought that the family of George Floyd was going to be in attendance. So did they, just to follow up now that it's over, did they actually come? What was their reaction?
So we had the executive director of the George Floyd Foundation there.
Okay.
At the concert, the family members at this kind of at the last minute didn't follow through, but you know, we have videos and they're certainly made aware of it, and they've been very, very supportive, and the director of their foundation was very supportive. In fact, we're looking possibly towards collaborating in the future.
Great. And Chuck, from your church's perspective, do you, you know, are you going to be encouraging members of, you know, the congregation? Are they going to be coming out to enjoy some of these concerts?
Absolutely. The congregation will be there. I've received many questions. So I expect that they will be there in full force for either both or one of the two events that will take place.
So Chuck is not saying, and I thought that I wasn't sure whether he will be talking about this or I will be talking about this, but actually the choir from the congregation will be singing a set outside in the lobby.
Oh,
prior to the Messiah performances. So actually the festivities begin at 7 o'clock. So come early at 7 o'clock to enjoy the choir from the Scotland AME's Zion Church, and then in a gospel choir presentation, and then the Messiah begins at 8 p.m.
Wow! So show up early at 7 and hear the actual church's choir for the opening hour, and then go into the music hall at 8 for the Philharmonic performance. Wow!
Exactly.
That's great. And Chuck, I'm curious. I mean, this is such a deep and fascinating conversation. I could talk about it all day, but I'm just curious, like, Chuck, so like, basically what Peter was saying about how the Philharmonic itself, you know, is sort of re-examining its annual performances of Handel's Messiah based on what we've been learning about him making money off benefiting from the slave trade. How have you at the church been? How have you handled that over the years? I mean, has the choir and the congregation sang Handel's Messiah? Have you phased it out before this, or how have you grappled with it?
We have not sang Handel's Messiah. We do look forward to being able to do that. Unfortunately, our preparation time will not afford us to be able to do so this time around, but hopefully there will be others. I will say that music is really big, has been a strong part of Scotland AME Zion Church. And under the direction of our current Minister of Music, Music Director, Michael Terry, the choir has done some phenomenal things. We are looking forward to putting something together. Our goal is to get everybody in the festive spirit so that when they come in at 8 o'clock and at 3 o'clock on Sunday to hear Handel's Messiah, we have them sort of pumped and primed and ready to engage and enjoy that performance.
Great. And Peter, just speaking to this broader concept of, you know, like what you're saying, trying to separate the art from the artist when these new revelations are coming to light. How does that factor across other composers over the years? You know what I mean? Like all the famous composers you guys perform over the years, I'm sure Handel's probably not the only one, right? So is this something you're going to try to continue to do as you discover things?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's so much re-examination of what we do, and so much rightful re-examination of history. Goodness gracious, not just in music, but in everything else, in all of the arts, in the foundation of our nation, of course. I mean, what does it mean that both George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and so many others were enslavers? So I think there's a lot of grappling that needs to happen. And a lot of thought needs to go into what is an appropriate response, what is an appropriate way forward. And like you said, in music, in terms of the composers we play, and so many other issues, the composers that we've neglected because of because they weren't white men. So that's a work in progress, Jason.
Yeah, Jason, if I can jump in there, I want to commend Peter on what he is saying. There's a Chinese proverb that I heard some time ago, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. And as we talk about reparations and things of that sort, I know everybody instantly thinks showering people with money. That may not necessarily always be the answer. And what Peter is doing, I think, is a step in the right direction. We need to look at how do we sort of repent, repair, and reframe what has taken place historically, not only in this country, but in the area as well. So doing the things that Peter has proposed doing, I think will go a long way towards mending relationships with all of our communities.
So well said. And I just want to commend both of you for creatively flexing your brains and finding a creative path that will sort of bridge that will, you know, you can still hear this beautiful holiday music that we've all sang for years, but the money will be going to help restore, rebuild, which was part of the problem funding the guy to begin with. Like, I think, I don't know, I'm just speaking for me. I think you've found a creative, clever way to kind of make it happen. So thanks for talking to us. Is there anything else you want to mention before we hop off?
We just invite everyone to come out December 17th at 7 o'clock. And the Handel's presentation, Messiah, will start at 8 o'clock. And again on December 18th, a Sunday, at 2 o'clock to hear Scotland. And the Messiah performance will begin at 3 o'clock.
And Peter, anything you wanted to add?
No, that's perfect. The clip that he just gave you is perfect.
Yeah, I think so too. And and if we may, I know that's always public airwaves, separation church of state, blah blah blah. But like, if you want to church it up for a second for me, Chuck, you know, just speak to, you know, the holidays and why it might be part of what you preach to sort of re-examine this stuff and raise money to help. And I don't know, if you want, go for it.
Sure. Well, the holidays always seem to be a time where we get people who are much more civil towards each other. It's keeping that spirit in place. But it seems that as soon as the calendar changes, folks go back to their respective corners. It would be great if we can keep that spirit, that sweet, sweet spirit throughout the year and throughout the years to come. So hopefully this is going to be a start in bringing communities together, recognizing different cultures, different genres of music, and let's all appreciate everything that we hear.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining us. Again, let me get the dates right. It is December 17th and 18th at Strathmore. And then again, December 23rd at Capital One Hall, just across the river in Tyson. So, yeah. Hey, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, Chuck is so much more articulate than I am. So you got lots of good clips there.
I love your humility, Peter. You said some pretty eloquent
I'll,
stuff yourself.
I'll stick to my lane.
Peter, you did pretty good for yourself.
You're like, I'll keep my mouth shut and my hands waving. Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Peter, thanks again.
Thank you, Chuck.